in there as well, which is where I want to refer the panel to. Okay. So as you see in those cross sections, there's been a conscious decision to put the pool fence actually at the water edge. So therefore, there is a clear separation of any activity associated with the pool and to the fringe. So that means that the landscaping around is exactly that purpose. So from our view, there wouldn't be any ability for anything to occur of that nature. As I said, this is a private pool. It's not a communal pool. So the residents, in our view, would certainly be managing that. The other issue is that the water depth is not overly deep as well. So it's not a pool which has any great depth. But as I said, the fencing along the pool would create an appropriate buffer. Thank you.
Sorry, the area shown on the plans as the overflow drainage area shall be treated with suitable landscaping with plans submitted to council for approval and subject to meeting the requirements of council's drainage engineers. And Mr. Chair, I would so move that, I think.
And then you better deal with the actual decision.
Oh, in the background...
Under the conditions, we haven't actually formally resolved the application.
Yes, Mr. Chair, so the... 4.6. Yes, it's item 4, isn't it? Which one is it?
Number 7.
We've got a 4.6. There you go, to page...
I've got it here, Mr. Chairman. 434.
434 is
Mr. Chairman, the panel has inspected the application, the site of the application this morning, and with the exception of one particular amendment, which is just a wording amendment, and I will read it out, Mr. Chairman. It's on page 434. At the end of the first part A, that is 9A of the recommendation, the word that should be substituted the line should read, because it is consistent with the objectives of those particular standards with an S and objectives. So with that minor change, and noting that that there was a section 4.6 agreed to as being suitable and demonstrated by the applicant, that the proposed development would be in the public interest. I propose, Mr. Chairman, to move the recommendation as on page 434.
A and B.
A and B.
Yes, that's a unanimous decision.
Yes.
When I mentioned about the heights and for future reference, just my own surface of buildings around there, when they say 14 metres, 14 metres is 14 metres, throwing something in the middle of it and throwing another 3.4, that doesn't sound right to me.
Is that okay?
You're right.
You can hear me okay. All right. Good morning. So the report for 2 Lonsdale Street, I'm living 11A Lonsdale Street and have done for 8 years. And the report that I have in front of me states that the development of 2 Lonsdale Street, converting the existing 3 units and 1 office space into 7 units, is going to have an acceptable impact on the surrounding residents. And it's actually not the case. And in some places, the report's factually incorrect. I know that council has said that it's largely correct, but as the residents, we don't feel that a decision should be made on a report that's largely correct. We think that everything should be taken into account. From our perspective, in Lilyfield, it is, especially in our area, it's a family-oriented neighbourhood. We've got some very elderly people and we've got some very young families. There is actually no need in Lilyfield for 3 studio apartments or 1 bedroom. If I want to go and buy a 1 bedroom, a 2 bedroom or a studio apartment, or residents in Lilyfield today. There are 327 empty available on domain.com that I can choose from. I don't see that cramming three more into our quiet street is really fitting the needs of anybody except the developer that obviously wants to maximise the investment they've made in the property. The biggest problem for us is parking. Lonsdale Street's full, Ainsworth Street's full, Piper Street's already full. There isn't any room for cars. I know council says you only need 0.6 of a car per unit, but in actual fact, ABS says that the average is 1 to 3 cars per unit, so we're looking at putting nearly 14 extra cars on our street with capacity on site for only 3. Even the developers...
In the interest of being able to digest as you're going at great speed, I'll give you an extra minute now.
Will you? Okay, yeah, thank you, because
so
I am talking fast to get through it. Okay.
It'll be more helpful to us. Thank you.
Right. So one of the issues with parking is that obviously it brings too many cars into an already overpopulated street for a commercial decision. It's not, the area doesn't need any more accommodation of that style or type. The developer in their plan showed 2 car parking spaces on the front of 2 Lonsdale Street. There's only 1. We stood outside it this morning, but the plan showed 2. It also shows another 3 adjacent to 2 Lonsdale Street, I guess to give the impression that cars can park there from the new development, but in fact, cars are parked there all day, every day now, and so it's full. There isn't any room. Another concern is just changing the character of our neighbourhood. As it's elderly, it's families, one bedroom. There's concern from residents who I appear to be representing today about Airbnb and casual renters. The council report says, yes, but you can't have Airbnb because it's not zoned for that. You can go onto Airbnb today and do a look-up for accommodation in Lilyfield. There are 76 properties within a 20-minute walk of 2 Lonsdale Street on Airbnb available for rent. So whether we want to recognise that in the report, factually, those sorts of residences, and there are plenty of them in the area, 327 are empty, are also being used for Airbnb. It's not the character of our street. There's other practical assumptions about the residents as well. If you have 7 units there, you've got 14 bins. Now, for those of you that visited the site today, there's nowhere for them to go. Just practical elements like 14 rubbish bins on bin day out from 7 o'clock in the morning when people go to work till 5 o'clock in the afternoon when the bin came. You can't put them on the pavement because you block the pavement. So the only place to put them is beyond the park cars in the middle of either Piper Street, blocking the road for all the traffic trying to get down Piper Street, or you put 14 bins in the middle of Lonsdale Street, blocking the left-hand side of Lonsdale Street. So it's very convenient to say there's room for this development, but in actual fact, there's not room for the cars, there's not room for the bins. The traffic flow assessment is another concern to residents. The traffic flow assessment for our quiet cul-de-sac in Lonsdale Street was actually done from the other side of the City Westlink. The traffic flow into Lonsdale Street will be significantly increased because they're going to start using the car spot that's in Lonsdale Street, which hasn't been used for the 9 years I've lived there. That's actually where the previous residents used to put their bins, but they won't be able to put the bins there now because they're using it as a car spot, as a visitor's spot, which means everybody coming to visit, they've got one spot for visitors for 7 units. They won't be able to park in the one spot, so they'll come along Lonsdale Street. I'm not so worried about my car park. I'm an able person, but it is also an inner west bike path, so we're also putting 14 cars. They go inner west bike path for Leichhardt goes up Lonsdale, round Piper into Ainsworth, and we're going to just put 14 cars, 14 bins in the middle of that.
You need to bring it together. You've had your extra time as well.
I'm fine. I'm just arguing that to a reasonable person, how can any of that be described as an acceptable impact on the residents?
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks
for the extra time.
Thank you. Georgina Dixon, by the way, lodged a written submission which we received this morning, so her absence is not altogether lost, as far as that's concerned. Peter Moller.
Hi, Ron.
We also have a written submission from you this morning, Mr. Moller.
Yes, thanks for letting me speak. I live directly behind the proposed development at 2 Lonsdale Street, and I'm one of 27 objectors to the development.
Yes, all right, we assume and, you're objecting.
Yeah, and the main thing is just it's just too many apartments for the size of the building and the proximity to neighbours. With 7 apartments so close to us, be considerable increase in noise. Because there's not a great deal of space between our house and the apartment building. And as the previous speaker mentioned, parking is going to be extremely difficult. There's three parking spots on the site, but they're losing one on the street to form the driveway. So it's only a net two increase, but there'll be seven apartments and who knows how many cars per apartment. So parking is already very difficult, and it's going to get much more difficult if this development's approved with seven apartments. The other thing is that the development's an overdevelopment of the site with low-quality apartments. If you look at the plans, it looks... I mean, they're trying to squeeze as many apartments as possible into the size of the building, and the result is very small, low-quality apartments. And if you have a look back to... There was a March 18, 2019 request to withdraw, and the council had several issues with the plans in, with seven apartments in terms of the size, the amenity of the open spaces, the access to solar access to the apartments, and the conclusion was that the should be was you know, that the developer should consider less apartments on the top and bottom floors, but it's still maintained as seven apartments, and it's advanced this far. So the result would be seven quite low-quality apartments. The other point is that it's a negative impact on the character of the neighbourhood. As the previous speaker mentioned, the neighbourhood's largely houses owned by families, not apartments. And given the small size of the apartments, you know, all jammed in, we think eventually they'll be used for some sort of short-term rental, like an Airbnb or student rental or something like that. So, that's my thoughts overall, that they're just trying to squeeze as many apartments in there as possible with doing as little building works as possible. And the end result will be sort of a poor quality. So I think, yeah, definitely.
I'll see if there's any questions, Mr. Moller. No, thank you, Mr. Moller.
Okay.
Assistance.
I also was going to note that I got given some signatures of people who were objectors but couldn't make the meeting, who agreed with the comments of the speakers. But I'm not sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dawn Brown. I see that we have a summary of what you want to say. It sounds as though Mr. Moller and you are at one in relation to a number of matters.
Well, that's not really surprising, considering
we saw you on site today, I think, didn't we? Yes.
Yes,
and we've
did.
Got your two-line piece of paper in front of us identifying your issues.
Oh, in fairness to that, I was hoping to submit a separate letter, which I took to council.
I'm not stopping you. I'm just telling you what we've got.
Yes.
Thank you. And we did have the benefit of a conversation on site.
We did.
Good. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to address the panel today as a fairly new objector, an unlisted objector to the development of 2 Lonsdale Street in regards to the number of on-site parking versus the number of dwellings proposed. I am a resident of Ainsworth Street. I live about halfway down, and I've been there for 20 years. It's becoming increasingly and concerningly difficult to exit and enter Piper Street from Ainsworth Street due to the parking of vehicles on what can be described as a T-junction to a fairly busy, narrow road. I would like to reiterate at this point that both the traffic impact report and today's inspection was at a time that it is difficult, if not impossible, to obtain a true account of the number of cars entering and exiting Ainsworth and Piper, but also the density of cars around the adjacent property. A traffic plan, pretty much at any other time, whether it be morning, 5 o'clock, on the weekend, would highlight to council that there are genuine, obvious concerns about the number of properties versus the parking. I would like to state my objection to the recommendation that the surrounding environment cannot absorb the many cars, boats, trailers and trucks that will be added to this location as a result of multi-dwelling development. there is limited and no parking to the entire street after 4 o'clock. And it is simply not true that residents in the Ainsworth Street can absorb this knock-on effect. Half of the people don't actually know about the development. I appreciate it is not my right to walk or park within reasonable distance of my house. However, Ainsworth Street is not a street that has parking permits or restrictions, and neither can it apply for one. In such an area, where there is parking permits, I would normally be protected by the fact that since 2001, strata and multi-development properties are excluded from any permit schemes. This rule exists to protect single-dwelling residents from additional parking created by strata, or at the very least, encourage new residents to have a car, not to have a car. Therefore, in this transitional time where the blanket policies on streets are non-existent in Lilyfield in regards to parking, the council, you, the panel, are my only avenue to acknowledge and protect against unreasonable height developments in regards to parking. And I urge the council today to request the council to revisit the design based on the sheer location of the corner of Ainsworth Street. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, panel members. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Luffy's client. I wasn't involved in the early parts of the DA. Effectively, we're comfortable with the recommendation, obviously, because it is for approval. We agree that it is accurate and it is correct. Our only issues, and I can address a couple of the matters raised by the residents once I've put the proposition to you, but our primary issue has to do with the conditions, most importantly the fact that the deferred commencement conditions are pretty much simple standard engineering type matters. They're just matters of fact. They're not intrinsic in terms of the capacity of the council to approve the DA. They just simply ask for pipe sizes, driveway widths and the like. So they could be just, as they are in most cases, normal operational conditions. Within those conditions, though, there are a couple of strange components. 1B asks for a minimum...
Excuse me, Mr. Fillon.
Yes, Ms. Magley.
Can I just assist you, perhaps, in that... do you have the conditions in front of you?
I have part A, yes.
Well, in the deferred commencement, number 2... And it talks about the driveway to pipe to Lonsdale Street?
Yes.
That should be Piper Street?
Yes. Yes, I was going to get through all of those for you quickly.
Okay.
Firstly, 1B asks us for a minimum of 2,200 millimetre headroom. Our car parking spaces are at grade. So we can comply with the condition quite easily, but it's a bit silly. It also asks us for longitudinal sections, which would reflect, in normal circumstances, a driveway down to a basement. We don't have one. The conditions that you were talking about, or the condition about Lonsdale Street, we understand that it really should be Piper Street, and it's reflective of condition 1E. It's a repeat, and we have no problem with that. We can move the driveway along so that its western edge of splay is at 5.4 because that matches another condition which requires the internal length of the car parking spaces to be 6 metres. So clearly the driveway, the apron of the driveway has to clear the end of the spaces. So we don't have any problem with the rest of them. It's just we don't believe they should be deferred commencement. In terms of the matters raised by the residents... The building is an approved block of flats. We are seeking, yes, an increase in units. All of those units satisfy, I'm told, satisfy the minimum area sizes in the ADG, even though SEP 65 doesn't apply to the building. Whether somebody chooses to short-term rent their apartment or their house is not an issue in this case. We're simply asking for a permissible development. And in terms of bins, we will have a strata manager, a building manager, who will take the bins out of the common area every collection day and have them ready for collection and then remove from the street. The building itself doesn't move, so our proximity to neighbours hasn't changed at all since it was previously occupied as a residential flat building. We have an acoustic report which was prepared for this DA, which has been assessed by the council's relevant staff and found to be both accurate and satisfactory. And as I said, our units comply with SEP 65. Our car parking rates are as per the council's car parking rates. They're generally lesser in inner city areas, but we satisfy it, and we're happy to move forward in that sense. So I'm happy to take any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Was it right when I was on in the area to observe that most of the properties that are existing properties don't have off-street parking?
You are correct. Most. There were a lot. When I was there, there were quite a number of cars parked on the streets, but there was still able parking. You might have to walk.
No, that isn't what I asked you.
But a lot of them, particularly in Lonsdale, don't have on-street parking.
Yes, thank you.
And I think they have 90 degrees.
I'm just confirming my own observation.
Yeah, I think that's why they have the 90 degree spaces.
And I hear that the resident agrees as well. Any questions, Mrs. Taylor? Yes, Mrs. Taylor.
One of the letters of objection, Mr. Furlong, says that this facade is an eyesore and there are no changes to the facade. Can you tell us what you are proposing?
There are. I believe the intention is to render the building, Mrs. Taylor, but Mr. Luffy is the architect, so it's probably better that he answers that one.
Thank you. I spoke to a council staff, and what we've agreed to do is to actually change the balustrade formation and pattern, as well as using more identifiable colours and more in keeping with the streetscape of what colours and treatment there is to all the balustrades. So that's where. And the other thing also is that where we've got some windows, they've now become sliding doors. So we've actually just changed the rhythm of the front facade as well.
I'm thinking in particular of a very, very large front wall or side wall of the property. What are you intending to do with that?
What we're doing is, it's the same thing. It's an existing building. We are punching holes through it to create large openings.
In that wall?
That's correct. Where we've got the lounge room and where we've got some bedrooms. We've got the balconies that are existing.
I'm sorry, I'm talking about a fence, a very large fence.
Oh, sorry.
I think that's what's being referred to as an eyesore.
We're going to render it. We're actually maintaining the height of 1.8. It's existing. And we're going to remove the archway completely so that it just becomes one nice facade, and it's going to be rendered and painted.
It's going to be?
Rendered and painted.
Thank you very much.
Nothing further? Any question?
No.
You question?
No.
Yes.
Thank you. No further questions.
Anything?
Do we?
Merely.
Well, are we still okay with keeping it as a deferred mechanism?
Yes. Yes.
And take those two B and C out. No, I've got that.
You've got that.
Yeah.
What's been
inserted will be that condition regarding just the use address. This is an application to convert the existing two-story building into a seven-unit residential flat building, remove three palm trees, and provide additional parking. The proposal complies with the diverse housing and site coverage requirements under the statutory planning controls, However, the proposal does not comply with the applicable floor space ratio for the site, being 0.85 rather than 0.6:1, and the landscaped area also does not comply. The applicant has submitted requests for variations of those standards under clause 4.6, and as the proposal actually reduces the floor space ratio and increases the amount of landscaped open space, the variation is supported by the panel.
And the request is seen as being in the appropriate form.
Many of the submissions on the application raise questions with regard to overdevelopment and parking. As the proposal does in fact reduce floor space ratio, it is difficult to argue overdevelopment. In addition, the proposal provides 3 additional car parking spaces, making a total of 4. This complies with Council's code. And there's also a request to slightly move the proposed access in Piper Street, and this will maintain the existing legal on-street car parking provision in the vicinity of the proposal. The applicant has requested a deferred commencement be taken off. We've had discussions with the council's engineering staff. They believe that the request is still valid, and there is a redesign, and they will. Aiming to keep the deferred commencement. However, we're assured that it can be dealt with very quickly once a redesign is made. With regards to that deferred commencement, we hear what Mr. Furlong says, and we will take out parts B and C of that request. Also, in regards to E of that, is that okay? Just take B and C. Page 619.
Yep.
With regards to the delineation of the relocation of 540 millimetres, that should in fact be 6,300 millimetres. And that's in point E, yep. And also in major point 2. In major condition 2, Lonsdale Street should also...
In the operative condition.
Yes, sorry. Lonsdale Street should also be changed to Piper Street.
So what's the decision?
The panel considers that the proposal will have no unacceptable bulk and scale impacts, as the only addition will be a small waste storage room at ground level. There will be no increase in wall or ridge heights, no changes to roof form, and the whole building will be rendered and painted and include new balcony treatments. The panel supports the recommendation outlined on page 618 of the agenda, supporting the clause 4.6 variations and approving the proposal subject to conditions. With regard to the conditions, condition 26 has been included in error and should be deleted. And a new condition 26 is also proposed to condition those concerns of the residents with regards to Airbnb and short-term rental. Do we have that?
Is that coming up?
Yes, sorry. So just
delete condition 26 and add new to condition 26.
So just give us 2 seconds.
Sorry. We've lost it.
Yeah.
given up. Gone and done the weekend shopping. We've got those staff now as well, so.
He's outside trying to sort it out. Luke is outside speaking to them.
Right.
Have we got somebody from?
She in the premises?
Sorry.
Oh, here she is. Yes. Thank you. Yes, we brought you forward. It's not your fault, but we're just having regard to expediency and convenience. And Mr. Rathod, we ask that you make your submission now in relation to item number 11, which relates to the property 232 Smith Street, Summer Hill. And I note that we visited the site today and you were present at that inspection. We hear your submission.
Okay. Just give me a moment to catch my breath. Sorry. Okay, thank you and hello. My name is Ritika. I own an apartment in the Flour Mill complex and I'm directly impacted by the DA. Today I'm representing myself, the Strata Committee for Stage 2, and the 19 people who signed the petition opposing the DA who couldn't be here today. So we have two primary concerns. The first is the mechanical shaft proposed to run along the west side of the Weed Silos building, directly outside our hallway windows. The dimensions of the shaft are large and will significantly obstruct the view from the windows in our apartment hallways overlooking Summer Hill. And this was one of the selling points of the apartment, and of course we paid extra for it. The mechanical shaft, it's important to note, was not in the original design, and we're very concerned with this will devalue our properties and impact our ability to rent and sell in the future. In addition to this is the noise the shaft will generate. The motor will sit on top of the roof directly above my apartment, and it's worth noting that the exhaust system installed by the same developer above the car park causes a loud noise every single day for about 20 minutes at approximately 8:48 a.m. We have raised this with the developer and they have not addressed it. The second major concern is the noise that the premises will generate due to the size and the scale, 100 plus patrons 7 days a week. The retail operations are directly below our apartment building and we know the noise will travel because there's currently a children's park across our building designed by the developer without any consultation, which we maintain as owners through our levies, and nearly every weekend we have people coming in from everywhere having parties in the park. The noise is constant, and the addition of food and beverage facilities will only compound the matter. We believe, like everyone, we have the right to the quiet enjoyment of our home, which this development will not allow. We would like the developer to consider an alternative use of the space, such as a yoga studio, and if this is not entirely possible, then an alternative location for the shaft. We've already identified a location that does not affect any owners, but this has been dismissed by the developer. We are not opposed to a vibrant precinct, but we would like the developer to consider the impact of their initiatives on the people that live there every day and genuinely consult with us in these matters. And that's really everything I have to say.
Thank you for your assistance. Any questions?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Taylor.
Ms. Rathod, I think the problem is that you're losing view from the private hallway of your unit. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
It's not a hallway that's part of the Strata ownership.
No, it's my own apartment.
Yes, thank you very much.
And that's the same on all 10 floors, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Every apartment facing west.
Floor.
Yes, exactly.
9 floors, probably. Yes, thank you. Nothing more?
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you for your assistance. Pushoy Gobran.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and panel members. My name is Pushoy. I represent EG Development Manager, who are the development managers for the Flour Mill project. Just wanted to make a couple of quick comments in response to Ms. Radika's comments about representing the Strata. In fact, we have obtained Strata body corporate approval at the AGM, and you'll note that we have the Strata seal applied and a letter of consent from the owners' corporation. So we do not believe that the concerns represent the owner's corporation.
Well, just a minute, please. Yeah. Just a minute. We can deal with it. You're talking about the consent to lodge the application.
Correct.
Yes, well, that's not an approval. Keep going.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, apart from that, I mean, the flour mill project is not something that has been recently designed, has not been recently thought of. It's been a long project with a long history of over 11 years of design and consultation and creation, envisioning a design. Essentially, the spaces that are in question for this particular retail application were always envisaged for that particular purpose, were always envisaged for that particular use, and it was actually mandated by the Department of Planning to maintain an activated ground plane, and that was always the design and intent for those spaces. We've read the report submitted by the assessing officer, and we largely support all of the conditions and recommendations of that report. The only issues that we take some exception to is in relation to the atypical acoustic and hours of operation requirements and the trial period. These are relatively atypical of a retail consent, and we would say that the acoustic report that's been submitted with the consent would be sufficient to mandate compliance with the relevant Australian standards and the requirements of council and the Office of Liquor and Gaming. And if such compliance is demonstrated, which I believe in condition H3, you've requested a 60-day test result to be provided to council demonstrating such compliance, we would state that and submit that the 12-month trial period of the hours would be unnecessary. What I'd like to encourage the panel to consider is that we want to be encouraging to businesses here. We don't want to discourage businesses. These spaces have been constructed and completed since October 2017, and they have not been leased to this day. The reason being that the businesses are quite fearful of the residents sort of objecting and blocking them from such spaces, and they're concerned that that will impact their business and their ability to thrive within the flour mill precinct. So we would encourage the panel members to consider that if compliance had been demonstrated through that reporting and testing that's required following occupation, that that would be sufficient to allow for the ongoing operation of that business without any further conditions. In relation to the ventilation shaft, we rely and support on the recommendations of the council officer, and that is the most appropriate space. We've put a lot of thought into where that could go, and unfortunately it was not put in the original design through the building, and we've now had to do this after the fact, and any other position would be close to an openable window and not comply with the relevant Australian standards. That is the only location that would be possible for the compliance with the Australian standards, as it's they're all fixed panels rather than openable windows in that portion of the building.
Any questions for Mr. Goblin?
Yes, I was just going to say it's been 9 years in the making, Mr. Goblin.
Correct, that's
and
right.
And you didn't find a place to put the ventilation shaft until now.
Unfortunately, I was not present at the time during the design, so I can't comment on why that was
so
not.
So you're not taking personal responsibility?
No, well, look, I mean, I wish we had included for this in the original submission, otherwise we would not be sitting here today.
Mm. Yeah, in front of
so I understand. Yeah.
Glass windows of private owners.
Completely understand your concern there.
Unassociated private owners.
Completely understand, but the case is that, unfortunately, it was not originally allowed for within the building, so this is the situation that we've had to be faced with at this point in time.
Any other question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Gobram.
Thank you.
The panel has visited the site and has taken consideration in relation to the application to fit out and use the commercial premises within buildings 5A and 5A for E for retail food and drink premises. Noting, of course, that these two sites were always intended for that type of use, so that the panel isn't greatly concerned about the physical use of the premises as proposed in the application. However, as indicated by the objectors and by questions from the panel, clearly there is a considerable concern about the impact of the ventilation shaft being placed as is proposed outside nine unit areas within the private unit area of those premises and over the 10 floors, and then exhausting above those particular units. The panel is most concerned about the location and operation of that shaft, not only from the point of view of its operating capacity in that position and the impacts that it may have, but as for the visual impact, which we consider it's too intrusive on important views from the units that are concerned. The panel actually inspected the units today and reached its own conclusions in that respect. To the extent that it's sufficiently adverse to amenity for the panel to not accept that with the information before it, that there is no alternative to this most unsatisfactory location for that particular piece of equipment. And it's for that reason that the panel cannot approve the application while ever that exhaust continues to be in that position, or the panel is convinced in some other way, or the consent authority is convinced in some other way that there is absolutely no alternative whatsoever, none of which have been put to us in any formal way. So that the panel is sufficiently concerned about that issue alone to determine that the application should be refused, and there are some here they are. They're going to resolve the application for the following reasons.
Mr. Chairman, I have to speak to that point.
Just a minute, please. Well, you had your opportunity to speak. Well, specifically, you were given the opportunity to speak. Sorry? Haven't you? All right, so it's just my reasons. I am prepared to hear you, though, now that you've heard that the panel is concerned. And I'll hear you shortly.
Sure. So, Mr. Chairman, the council attended site with our mechanical engineers and their and council's mechanical engineer. So they also had the benefit of reviewing multiple locations considered within the mechanical design.
We accept all that.
And they had agreed and also supported the idea that that was the most appropriate location possible.
We do understand that.
Mr. Chairman, this proposed design is actually coming at quite an added and considerably significant cost to us as a developer. Ordinarily, we had originally planned to discharge to the shop fronts. However, we were concerned by some of the other residents about the noise and the smell that this may have at the ground plane. So our reasoning was to take this all the way up 13 stories to
Mr.
the very
Godwin,
top
we do
of the
understand
roof
all of that. We understand the predicament that we are creating for you.
Sure.
We understand we're not suggesting in any way that your actions have been other than in the best interest
of
and
course
after full of the consultation that you say.
Yes.
But nevertheless, the panel hasn't got before it enough information to enable it to support that particular location, nor is it satisfied that that it's beyond comprehension to have another alternative.
Sure.
You indicated another alternative that might have been considered, and you may have to go back and reflect on that.
Perhaps.
But at the moment, with the information before the panel, we have no alternative because of the way in which we see the impact on amenity, but to refuse the development application on that ground.
Perhaps,
the rest
Mr.
of the
Chairman
development application... Yeah. I might be prepared to indicate on behalf of the panel,
yes,
insofar as the use of the premises is concerned, if it wasn't for the exhaust arrangements,
yes,
the development would be approved.
Sure.
So perhaps refused on those grounds.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps could I suggest in that respect, to satisfy that concern of the panel, that as a condition of consent, we would essentially be required to come back to council prior to the issue of any construction certificate for a more detailed assessment of the mechanical design.
No, that's not satisfactory. I think that there could be all sorts of ramifications which you need to address, but you are going away with the embrace of the development per se by this panel. We're not backing away from that. What you've got to go away and do, and because the alternatives could be anywhere with any other different sorts of impacts altogether, a different system altogether, we feel the appropriate way is to deal with it by way of a refusal with the knowledge that the use itself is not such that the panel today would refuse it.
That's the decision of the panel. It disagrees with the finding contained in the assessment report and resolves that the application be refused on the basis that the exhaust shaft arrangements are not satisfactory and need to be redesigned. Moving back now.
Unanimous.
Oh, yes, that's a unanimous decision. Yes, it's not me having a little play with myself. Now, we go back to item number 10. The first person listed to speak is Susan Vong, who I note has delivered a submission this morning, or it came to our attention this morning, and I assume that that is the context of what you propose to say. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My husband, our 8-year-old son, our 1-year-old dog and I occupy 10 Agar Street, one of the 7 lots directly facing Lot B's eastern boundary. As you would know, the applicant had unsuccessfully appealed council's decision to reject a previous DA submitted by the applicant. One key finding being that the applicant had failed or had used the same Balkan scale on both lots, despite the western and eastern boundary of such lots being very different, with the western side being one lot with the same orientation and the eastern side being 7 lots with differing orientations directly with their private, only open spaces directly facing the eastern boundary. The current DA replicates the similar design on both boundaries. Notwithstanding our disappointment with Council's assessment on the insensitive design of Lot B, having regard to feedback from the Land and Environment Court's decision, I wish to note and request the following. The proposed Lot B's east-facing window, which I pointed out to you on your inspection today, is a communal window that takes up half or more than half of our boundary. It faces our only open space, and whilst I understand that there's a minimum sill height of 1.6 metres, again, it's a communal dining area, and most adults are, or most teenagers and adults are taller than 1.6 metres. I don't believe that it's reasonable to have the window facing our only private open space, and as you will have noticed at the inspection, you can see directly through our hallway, and I unfortunately didn't get a chance to take you inside the house, but the first two rooms off the first part of the hallway is our only bathroom and the master bedroom. So as soon as you step out of the only bathroom and the master bedroom, you've got a clear gaze into where that window would be. So my request outlined in the submission is that the window be at least frosted or have some kind of splashback for privacy, and that it be fixed with restricted opening for the acoustics and noise, particularly where that's the communal area for entertainment.
Right, I think we understand that point.
Okay, the side setbacks. Under the DCP, the council has the discretion to determine side setbacks for lots narrower than 8 metres. The side setback is less than what it would be, and with, as I said earlier today, with the roof with the roof eave, that actually reduces the setback the visual setback by half of what it actually is.
Yes, I think we understood that on site when you pointed that out to us. Thank you.
If there is any condition that you're able to apply to the facade and the roof materials so as to not to cause reflection and glare into the seven adjoining lots that are facing.
We'll consider that.
And just generally, the height of the pitched roof is excessive. I talked about this a lot in my objection. The design of the walk-in wardrobe on the top floor, it's very likely to be used as a fifth bedroom or converted to a separate dwelling. In my view, the owners have got a track record of attempting, or the applicant has a track record of attempting to extract maximum floor space. And the height of the pitched roof, whilst the garage was reduced in line with the standards, the roof pitch of the top floor is still 2.2 metres high, and the roof pitch of the ground floor is still almost 2.6 metres high.
I think that's in your written submission.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Vong. Any questions? Questions? No. The next speaker listed is Andrew Inman. And Mr. Inman, likewise, we received a written submission from you, which we presumed would be an outline of what you had to say in your 3-minute time today, so bear in mind that we can read. Thank you. Have you pressed the red button?
Sorry.
That'll be better.
Sorry, yeah, thought it was on. One thing that I noticed was in the Marrickville DCP, the properties in the Newington precinct, and one of the desired future character of the area is to maintain distinctly single-storey streetscapes that exist within the precinct. So I feel that there's, you know, a conflict with what's being proposed in terms of that. Other residents nearby the development have also sort of mentioned that it's quite an unsympathetic addition to the streetscape, and I think that was raised in the Land and Environment Court as well. Again, in the Marrickville DCP for the Newington precinct, it says one of the goals is to protect groups or runs of buildings which retain their original built form, including rooftops, original detailing and finishes, which I don't believe the application does. Also, too, I'd just like to reiterate that one of the things that appears not to comply is the public open space on the two properties, which I believe was revised but still doesn't meet the standards. I would just like to point out that in terms of not really being sympathetic to the nearby houses, there are no two-storey residential houses nearby within that sort of same precinct and at that same zoning. And the finishes and the outlook of the property, as I say, like appears to be very unsympathetic with the rest of the nearby properties. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your assistance, Mr. Inman. Any questions? Oh, yes, there's one question from Mr. McEnany.
Mr. Inman, you said you attended or you were involved in the appeal?
No, I wasn't. I've my only first interaction was lodging that submission yesterday, my objection yesterday. But I referred to the, I think it was the Land Environment Court, made reference to consideration should be taken into how the development interacts with nearby properties, and I think they highlighted that.
Yes, we have a copy of the decision. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Inman. Mr. Lindsay Fletcher, acting for Mr. Ben McAlpine, who can't be here. Thank you, Mr. Fletcher. We met you on site today, and we have a written submission from you, which is entertainingly brief.
Thank you. I have a longer submission, which I can't get through in 7 minutes. So
3 minutes you've got.
I understand that, but I'm happy to hand up copies of that. I also have an aide memoir for you from this morning's inspection.
You can hand up anything you like, Mr. Fletcher.
Thank you. As I say, I've taken the liberty of giving you a copy of my full presentation, only highlight the key points. In my opinion, little or no weight should be given to the pre-DA advice. It's not a statutory requirement, not a relevant head of consideration. But perhaps more importantly, it's readily apparent the advice was given without the advisers having inspected the site from the Agar Street properties, nor having considered or regard to the findings of the court. I acknowledge that the proposal complies with the council's FSR and height under the LEP, but compliance with the numerical maximums alone is not sufficient, as the objectives of these standards must also be considered, acknowledged by the court at paragraph 54 of the judgment. You will have observed today, and others have mentioned, there's no other two-storey dwellings, or virtually no other two-storey dwellings in this entire block. The council mentions the height of buildings on the opposite side of the street, but doesn't tell you there are a different zone and a different height control. The other key observation I'm sure you've made today, and a determinative one considered by the court, is that the dwelling on proposal at B is adjoined by not one, but by seven neighbours, and they're very different in scale. In my opinion, the two-storey element of the proposed development is incompatible with the character of this locality. It's readily apparent the developers paid no regard to the very clear guidance for suitable development of the site that was provided by the court. You've got a huge agenda, so you'd be forgiven for not reading every page. You do have a full copy of that judgment.
We have the decision actually printed out for us, so that's
Thank you.
Helpful.
Yeah, no, I saw that, but can I particularly draw your attention to paragraphs 56 to 63?
Yes, we see that in your written submission, and thank you for doing that, Mr.
Thank you. You'll note the Commissioner in 60 says, I cannot conclude from the evidence, from the inspection of the site from the rear yard of Agar Street neighbouring properties, again, which you did this morning, that the proposed setback of the two-storey building is adequate to minimise visual impact. It would not maintain a reasonable degree of amenity for these neighbouring residents from the rear of their dwellings. The sense of enclosure for these residents and the outlook from their yards in the rear of the dwellings would be unreasonable. How has the developer responded to this clear guidance? Sorry, the Commissioner went on to say, I agree with the Council that the design of a building on Lot A needs to be different, or Lot B needs to be different from Lot A, shouldn't simply be mirror reversed. How has the developer responded? Well, as far as my client's concerned at number 6, and I dare say for 2, 4, 6 and possibly 8, they've made the matter worse. The proposal is still two identical buildings, mirror reversed. They're very large dwellings and they paid no regard to the differing scale and orientation of the adjoining dwellings. Unlike the proposal rejected by the court, this proposal, the two-storey component, provides no articulation. It's a solid wall and it's half a metre higher than the proposal rejected by the court.
Right. Can you just sum up, please?
Well, I will briefly mention noise and then conclude. My concern about noise is that it hasn't been addressed. A two-storey solid brick wall, as close as it is to the boundary there, and you witnessed the aircraft noise in this locality, I believe, although I don't claim to be an acoustic expert, but from my own experience, I believe there'll be significant reflection of noise from that solid two-storey wall into the rear of the properties. That has simply not been assessed, as far as I can see, and if it's to be a two-storey building, it ought to be assessed.
Yes.
Can I conclude and commend to the panel that the panel should either refuse the application or perhaps preferably, in the interest of some certainty, approve the application but with two additional conditions. Firstly, the deletion of the upper level of each dwelling, or at least the proposed dwelling on Lot B, and secondly, reduction in the floor-to-ceiling height of the ground floor level of both proposed dwellings to 2.7 metres, noting that it's actually increased. It's increased from 2.7...
That would involve a redesign, of course, because you'd have a new roof
It would, and particularly the first point, yes, it would, but I believe it could potentially be dealt with by a deferred commencement condition.
Yeah, all right.
I thank you for your time and apologise I've taken more than 3
thank
minutes.
Thank you. Very much, Mr. Fletcher. Grace Leck. We met you on site this morning and we know where your property is, so you can address us on the basis that we understand all of that and
yes.
that you've gone to the trouble of giving us a written submission as well.
Thank you.
So it's just a question of bringing it all together in your 3 minutes. Thank you very
much. All right. I'm the immediate owner next door at 121 Addison Road. And I have a surveyor's report to show that it was attachment E of the first DA objection, and anyone here is welcome to view it. And